Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Henry Cloud, Dr. John Townsend, and your phone calls today on New Life Live. It's a great day for New Life.
I'd like to thank all of you guys because you really, about 2 years ago, saved my life.
It's definitely a godsend in my situation right now.
The car or us?
No. The car is a 2008 Ford Mustang. I'm in love with it.
Oh, that's nice. That's a hard call. I think I might go for the car.
We have to go on vacation with them. We can't take our own vacation.
Why?
Talk about what's been lost. The anger represents something that's lost.
As a Christian, I have the security that even though I know I'm going to sin until the day I die, I have accepted Jesus' forgiveness.
God's word is not in conflict.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. John Townsend and Dr. Henry Cloud. Hey, I know this is a Flashback Friday show, but before we flash back, let me tell you, today, the 13th of March is the opening of I Still Believe. And, of course, it's by the producers of I Can Only Imagine. It's amazing. It's great. It's for younger people. They will love it. Here's my interview with John. He is with the Irwin Brothers. He and his brother, they produced this. He co-wrote it. Here's the interview.
John, we love supporting what you do. I mean, I've watched you guys over the years. Your movies get better and better. You always use great actors like Dennis Quaid or Gary Sinise, and your affiliation with Lionsgate, just everything keeps going your way because I think of this word quality that you guys put into this. So I want to encourage everybody listening. The 13th of March is opening day. I Still Believe, and after you see this movie, you're going to believe in Christian movies like never before. I think it will strengthen you in whatever struggle you're with. You're going to walk away believing God is there for you. Because this movie doesn't tie everything up in a nice, neat little bow like some movies do. There's struggle, there's reality, and it will impact you. Ask some folks to go with you, go see it. You will not be disappointed. You'll be glad you asked them. They'll be thankful to you.
That's what happened with I Can Only Imagine. When we all came to see I Can Only Imagine and unified our voice as a community, led to 8 million more tickets being sold in about 6 weeks. And that's where we saw so many lives changed. And then the film went global. Films just have it. It's a unique way of communication. It really is the language of the time. And it's something that I think we have to be involved in. One of my favorite stories is there was a woman and her son that was singing I Can Only Imagine. I believe it was in Australia. And as they were leaving the theater, a total stranger sitting behind them, a woman wouldn't leave her seat. And she said, "Excuse me, are you guys Christians?" And they said, "Yes, good to meet you. Are you?" And she said, "No, but the healing that happened in Dennis Quaid's life in this movie, I need to happen in my life. And I just need someone to explain it to me. Can you explain it to me?"
That led
to a conversation right there in the theater. That's what movies do. It's like setting a volleyball that you spike, and it's incredibly effective as a tool. And I just think we have a real opportunity, if we work together, to reach a generation in a whole new way.
Well, John, any closing thoughts here for our listeners?
Well, I just want to say thank you to everyone that's supporting the films. I'm actually sitting out in front of the Lionsgate building. There's never been a movie studio commit so many resources to Christianity and just give our audience the legitimacy and the tools and the resources that our audience merits and deserves in a whole new way. So just know that we're out here in Hollywood, that God is moving in ways that I've never seen before. God willing, we won't let you down, and we're just going to keep growing together, and I think we've only scratched the surface of what we can achieve. And I think what we make is movies, but why we make them is to recapture the imagination of a generation with the gospel, with hope, with truth. That's something that we can all rally around and that we can all do together.
Well, I agree with you, John, and so I want to encourage all of the New Life family here, go see it, ask some folks. You know, the late Francis Schaeffer said the gospel needs to be recommunicated into every new generation, and what a powerful way to do that through this amazing film. Find somebody, take them. You will not be disappointed. Thank you, John. We wish you well. God bless you, and God bless the movie. I Still Believe, opening March 13th.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. If you want to join us here, this is the A-Team. The boys are in today. Let's go over here and talk with Sharon. She's calling from Chicago, Illinois. She watches us on the NRB Network. Hello, Sharon.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. Thanks for calling us.
I have a question regarding a really rough time that I'm going through in my marriage.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, is there any circumstance where marriage counseling would actually be a detriment to the marriage or to us as individuals? I'm just really concerned that there might be some harm done from it.
What kind of harm would be done?
Well, in a couple of ways. As far as looking at the marriage, I'm afraid that some of the things, if I was to open up with and really to tell what's going on, that it could cost me everything. And that's kind of like from a practical standpoint. But then from an individual standpoint, I'm trying to work on some of the separate issues that I have, and I feel like I'm really kind of in a fragile state physically and emotionally, and I'm just, I have like abandonment and trust issues that go very, very deep, and they're long-standing with me, and it would be so difficult for me to go in and just kind of open up with a counselor. And then on top of the issues I'm having in the marriage.
To go in and open up with a counselor in marriage counseling, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it seems to me that there are two different issues here. And one is the theoretical issue of how to do marriage counseling and what's good and what might be harmful. But the other is just you and where you are in your life and the difficulty you have in opening up and the trust issues and all of that. Henry, you had a thought there?
Well, my first thought was that it's not so much is marriage counseling detrimental, it's what's going to go on in the marriage counseling that you choose. And if all of these issues, let's just take one example. If all of these issues are putting so much of a strain on you, and you're having to manage all of this, certainly that's got to have some impact on your marriage. And the marriage counseling could just be limited to focusing on, you know, like I'm going through this stuff and we want to maintain our connection while I'm going through this stuff and we need some help kind of with that and how he's impacted by it. But the other part of it is that let's pretend it's not even impacting, you know, the marriage. Then marriage counseling could be good for your husband to come in and know how to best help you down the path of healing. Now, on the other side of the equation, sometimes there is particular content that can come into a discussion in marriage counseling that the patient, you know, if you use the medical analogy, there are some treatments that the patient's not strong enough to take that medicine. The medicine will kill the patient, right? So the cure is not going to be good because it's not going to live through it. So in that instance, you got to have the wisdom of a counselor to know what can be brought up and how strong the relationship is and be, you know, strengthening the patient, i.e. the marriage, to the point to where it can at some point get into those issues that it might not be able to get into now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only piece I was going to add to that, Sharon, was it would be if the issues you're talking about, abandonment and trust, are what they are, why don't you get an individual therapist for right now for some kind of a season and tell that person, he or she, unless your marriage has got to do something right now, unless you're in a crisis, if you're not in a crisis, to say, I need some time to get stable and to know what my issues are and know there's a path, and then let that person kind of work with you as the quarterback and say, okay, now you guys are ready for marital therapy.
There you are.
And
well,
and I'd add one more thing, too.
I'll add another thing to that.
I've got something to add.
There are some circumstances, I think, where the absence of marriage counseling is a problem.
Yes.
And that is, if you have one or both parties that tend to be blamers more than owners, that they want to kind of go in and talk about how bad their spouse is in mm-hmm. their individual therapy or therapies, instead of owning their own issues and the therapist helping them to work with the relationship, then I think a marriage counselor in the mix is like almost essential to be able to hold it together while the other person's going through all this blame stuff.
Right. Well, to say that marriage counseling is always good would be saying that all marriage counselors are good. And
right.
that would be a naive approach to marriage counseling. You have to be sure that this person has a reputation in marriage counseling of helping people stay married. There are some people that it's optional with them. I'm either going to help them stay married or I'm going to help them get a divorce as soon as possible to get on with their lives. Mm-hmm. And I think you've got to know what you're dealing with there. Did you have you had a further comment there, Sharon?
Oh, yeah. I was just quickly going to say that I have recently, in about the past 2 months, started seeing a separate counselor for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm wondering if it's too much to take on.
Well,
with the marriage counseling,
is that counselor committed to your marriage and trying to help you with the marriage, or do you feel like the counseling is kind of disruptive or takes you away from your marriage?
Well, I think that counselor is trying to help me work and kind of, you know, identify some of these deeper problems that I have with anxiety and fears and something.
Okay.
And so she's kind of working on that. I'm trying to get myself healthy. But
so she's kind of doing for you what John was saying. Which
it's really
good.
Helpful, though. It sounds strange. You got to coach your therapist sometime and say, look, I'm pro-marriage. I'm in for life.
Especially if John's your therapist.
Absolutely. And say something like, you know, I want to deal with my issues, but I also want you to help me know how they affect the marriage, because I don't want to be a blamer. You know, I want to heal, and I want to forgive and grieve and restore and learn structure. But I need to know, like, what the beam in my eyes in the marriage, too. Yeah. That can be very helpful. And some therapists sort of are a little gun-shy about that. They need to sometimes get your permission to say that.
I had one therapist that I went to a couple of times, but it didn't get better. And so we would go in the office there, and then she
was the it that didn't get
well,
better?
Well, yes. We would sit down, and she would go like this.
Now, we're on radio, like, and Steve just kind of looked like somebody staring.
You know, like, just like, I've got to say hello, welcome to your office, or something like that, you know. And it was just so unnatural. Like, she learned this out of a book or something. So unnatural.
Actually, you know, that's a technical, it's a pretty well-researched, good technical thing to do.
Well, but I don't know. That smile that he gave is a little
weird. The smile is weird. But
it's good for some people, but you know, after you're sitting there for 10 seconds.
Well, let me play devil's advocate.
Okay.
The other side of that.
And you play the devil's advocate so well.
Well, why don't we do it this way? Steve, you be the client, and John, you be the therapist, and just show him how this works.
Okay.
Well, I was just going to do what she did, though. This is not helping our audience.
Well,
any.
Just do it. Do what she did. Right. I'll show it. I can't take it. I'm guilty. Please help me.
Because sometimes the person needs a transition from outside to inside, and if the therapist says, well, how was the week? They might have been going somewhere else, and all of a sudden the therapist said, this is my agenda. But if you create that kind of white space where the person can go in and go, what's deeply inside of me? So it's a good thing to come in and have some silence to allow the person to.
You know, Woody Allen said. He said his therapist died, and it was 6 months before he knew it.
Yeah. I really prefer, so how are you doing today? I just prefer that. You know, just get me going a little bit there. Don't stare at me. It's unnatural. We don't do that in society. I don't want it in my counseling session.
Well,
I never
wait
do
a minute.
That.
No, I never. Yeah, no.
I never do that.
What do you do?
Well, wait a minute.
I'm silent. I look at them and I wait and I'm for them and I don't make weird faces like you were talking about yours did, but they need a sacred spot to go, let me collect my thoughts. Mm-hmm. Is there something about me or God or something in the past or something about you and me that I need to talk about?
See, this is why I never went to you. God knew it wouldn't work. Good
then,
for both of us.
And then they start crying up, my dad never talked to me.
Yeah.
He just looked at me and
just
sat on the couch.
Yeah. What's your problem? My dad just stared at me. Okay. Oh, my goodness. Let's talk to Miss...
We're so helpful today.
Yeah. Miss Carol from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. WFIL is the station. Hello, Miss Carol.
Hello. Hello to you folks, and God bless you.
Thank you.
Now, this
you.
Is not Carol. This is Miss Carol.
It said
this is Miss Carol. I will tell you why. I've been...
Because you're not married?
I've been a miss since I was very little. When I was a bad child, according to, you know, dear old mom and dad, I was Listen Missy or Miss Carol, Miss Carol Marie, whatever. And I am white-skinned, but I am full-blood Native American Indian. And Indians tend not to use a surname because okay. God doesn't have a surname.
Now, Miss Carol,
yes.
This was how you were addressed when
yes.
they accused you of being a bad child.
Yes.
And you've decided to hang on to it?
Well, nobody
Steve
says,
has these,
listen here, Missy.
Questions.
I'm not staring.
Listen here, Missy. But I'm a miss because I've been widowed for 7 years.
Okay.
And... I like being addressed at this age by something other than Carol.
Okay.
How old are you?
I think I am 61.
61. All right.
Well, there are times when I prefer King, so I understand your desire to be addressed somehow. So how could we help you today?
Well, my question is, I'm having a lot of difficulty with interpersonal relationships, and it's been my experience of being a Christian since I can ever remember that God always breaks us. There's a brokenness that happens, just like the breaking of the bread, or breaking of Christ's body on the cross. And then the blessings come. But sometimes I don't know if my brokenness is because Satan is trying to work his evil or if God is trying to correct me.
Okay.
And
can you be
like
very
God is saying,
hey
really
Miss Carol, I got a question for you.
Yes.
Let's get it out of the theoretical for a second because you know there are times when bad people do bad things to us and that's not God doing something to us. There are times when God takes us through some discipline that can be tough that He's
yep.
trying to shape something in us. So let's get it out of the theoretical. Give us the situation. And tell us what the problem is.
The problem is elderly abuse. I sold my home, gave my son money to buy a home, and the stipulation was that I could live with him for the rest of my life.
Hmm.
And I lived with him for 2 years, and this past Thanksgiving, I decided I wanted to go to Vienna to be with a friend of mine that had invited me down for Thanksgiving dinner. And while I was there, well, actually, she lived in Alexandria, Virginia. My sister lives in Vienna. And while I was there, I wanted to go and visit my sister in Vienna. And I have not seen my sister or talked to my sister since 2005 when our father died.
Okay, so the question then for us would be what?
The question is, my son sent me a text message on Thanksgiving Day
mm-hmm.
and told me not to come home.
Don't come home.
So he made me homeless.
Now, how does that fit in with God or Satan?
Well, why would my son suddenly decide to make me homeless?
All right. If we take God and Satan off the table
yeah.
and talk about your son, why would your son decide that? Some possibilities are that your son is a selfish, self-centered kind of mean, bratty kid. Some others would be that there have been a lot of difficulties, and this is his way of addressing them. You know, what are the... Why would he do this? How would you answer that question?
Ms. Carol, this isn't coming out of the blue. This isn't a vacuum. So...
No, exactly.
On the break, think about that. This
well,
is probably no
the
surprise.
Only thing that happened, the only thing that happened is before that, I had expressed to my son my desire to go to school. And I was paying rent there. I was paying $850 a month.
And you and your son had a wonderful relationship before you said you're going to school?
Yes.
All right, Miss Carol, I want you to think about this.
I think it's a money issue.
All right, well, you know, life makes sense. And I have to believe that there's something else there that we're not talking about. So we'll deal with that when we come back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. You can write us at P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. We're talking with Miss Carol. And Henry, did you want to sum this up? Or do we need to... Well, let me just ask you this. Did you think of anything else that might be a problem for your son other than the fact that it's money? Anything that he did unusual, out of the ordinary over the past 10 years?
No, not really.
Okay.
Not really. I lived with him for 2 years.
Did he enjoy it, or did he seem to be annoyed by that?
No, he loved it.
Well, did you ask him why he told you not to come back?
He just said it is better if you do not come back. Now,
that's the extent of the conversations that you've had with him about this?
It was difficult to have conversations with a 34-year-old that does nothing that screams and hollers at you and...
Oh, wait a minute. Whoa, stop.
This is the elderly abuse I'm talking about.
Hold on. Just hang on a second.
Screams and yells.
He screamed and yelled at you. Was that the first time?
Oh, no. Oh, no. That went on for about 8 months before I decided to go.
Ms. Carol, this is what we were asking you. You said everything was wonderful and great and all that until you got this text.
Yeah.
See, this is why it's... Exactly what Steve said, that you know, life makes sense, and sometimes we can't understand something, but when you really start to look at it, there, you know, you can usually kind of figure it out. So if you're saying that you guys have had, you know, long-term turmoil, if there's nothing, you know, illegal or reportable or anything like that in this, what I would do is if you can't talk to him, then you've got to go talk to somebody who can make talking a possibility. Now, there's two routes to that. You could go to somebody who works with families and ask them the best approach to take, and he could be invited into that process to resolve this conflict. Or if you have a legal contract with him, which you said you did, mm-hmm. which was an agreement about this house, then what a good family attorney could do is force that conversation. And we like to do it without attorneys,
right.
But the Bible says the law is for the lawless.
Yeah.
And if he won't come to the table, at some point you've got to get your needs, you know, respected and met here, and hopefully in a way that redeems the relationship. So that would be, I think, your two options.
I'm going to send her how to have that difficult conversation.
Yeah,
because she needs to have one.
And we need, you know, also to talk to her off the air to find out if what she means by elder abuse and,
yeah.
You know, that kind of
all
thing.
All right, so we'll do it. All right, our website is newlife.com. All the resources we talk about here, you can find them right there at newlife.com. I want to read you something, and this is the kind of stuff that John and Henry and I, who were all involved in hospital programs, this is the kind of stuff we get all the time. I'm flying home right now after finishing up a speaking engagement in Arizona for women and a TV interview for Arizona's CNN News. It's Valentine's Day. The Nate Burka Show aired today with 2 million viewers watching, and it's hard to believe that 19 years ago I thought my life was over after being date raped. A year later, I was lying on the floor in one of your New Life clinics in the middle of the night crying out to God for hope. I'll never forget that night, Steve. He gave me a vision of not only healing me, but bringing healing to millions of women. I couldn't believe it at the time, but thank God that he doesn't base his plans on our doubts. Now, you know, that's the kind of stuff that happens when you let us help you. And we do the New Life Weekends. We've got one coming up. And those kinds of results are going to happen right there. And if you are interested, I want you to call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Let's talk to Elizabeth from Baltimore, Maryland, listening on WAVA. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
Hi. Good, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Steve, I met you in Salisbury when you were there for the, sorry, Oh, I just completely drew a blank.
When anyway, I was speaking there in Salisbury?
Yes, thank you very much.
To pastors or to everybody?
To everybody. Okay. It was your new book, Regret Pre-Living. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Well, thanks for calling us.
And I just briefly, you autographed a book for me, and I briefly said that my husband and I were now divorced after infidelity. And anyway, he wants to put it back together.
Okay.
We were married 36 years, 8 months, and 14 days.
How do you feel about him wanting to put it back together?
I would like to try to do that, but okay. I'm scared, and I believe that he probably is too. The affair was with someone that worked for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a double betrayal.
So what kind of work has he done since the divorce that would give you assurance that he is a different man, going a different direction, he's worked on his problems?
That's just it. I don't feel that he has worked on his problems.
Well,
how long has it been since you've been divorced?
We've been divorced 13 months, and we were separated in November 07. So we've been apart now a very long time. He came back into the house for about 5 months in the spring 09, but I discovered that he was still seeing her.
Mm-hmm.
And then after
Elizabeth, would it help us? Would it help you after the break for us to give you sort of a menu of things
yes.
to see in him and processes to go through to help
yes.
you feel safer?
And that way, you're not having to wonder or doubt if it's time. And my suspicion is it's not going to be time. A man who is remorseful over something like this seeks help. He gets some kind of accountability and partners with somebody. It's a different style.
It's not a great sign that he's not doing that already.
Right.
But
he might be willing if you require it. And that's why
there's some things to talk about.
We always ask, what did you require of that man? We need to require things. After the affair, we'll be back.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay in the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you a set of 4 devotionals, 100 Days of Character, Peace, Prayer, and the newly released 100 Days of Healing. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops.
I did go to Take Your Life Back. That's been immensely helpful to me. That's why I continue to support the ministry with the hope that not only am I helping my own situation, that I'm helping others as well.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. Find out more information about New Life or any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to the program.
We're back. We're talking with Elizabeth, whose husband wants to come back but hasn't done anything reparative or restorative or redemptive. He just wants to undo the divorce and get back together. John, you were going to give her a menu.
Well, you know, a better idea is that Henry wrote a book that just came out called Necessary Endings, and he has a whole chapter on when to have hope and when not to have hope.
Okay. We'll get a copy of that. We can send you Necessary Endings. But what does it say, Henry?
Well, here's the big deal. In anything that we're wondering, you know, can this get better, whether it's a business or, you know, a person, the big question to ask is your hope going to be worth anything? And we've got to distinguish the difference between am I wishing this would get better, or am I hoping this is going to get better? Because the Bible teaches that hope really has to have an objective reason. So here's what I would ask myself. What is going to be different is the first question. If there's nothing going to be different other than he says he's going to try, or he's committed, or he's really sorry, that's not anything different in terms of sustaining a change. So what would be different would be a new source of energy. Who's going to come alongside of him and push him down the path of change? Is there going to be a therapist, a recovery group, a coach, a discipleship group,
some
models? It can't be you. Okay? Where's the energy going to come from this? And where's the path or the template going to come from that's going to teach him to do things differently than he's done before? And that would mean he's doing readings, or he's going to workshops, or he's going to a therapist to learn things, or he's in some sort of program. And all of those two big categories have got to be there. Then you've got to ask, what's the structure for it going to be? It can't be he's going to do it kind of when he feels like it. It's got to be a structured program where he goes somewhere every day or every week or this one day and this another day. And you got to have a time and a place in the calendar for that to happen. The other thing you need is you need a verifiable way of knowing that he's staying in the process. Because what happens is people start and then they drop out and they get busy. And if you can't verify that he's plugged in into the process, then it's not going to work. And another huge one, and this is a very big one, where's the motivation coming from? If it's coming from you and you have to get him going to these things, then I wouldn't have as much hope as a self-motivator that there's no way you can stop him from doing that. We also want to see him around changing communities. We want to see him surrounded by people who are on a wellness path instead of a sickness path, because that's contagious.
Yeah.
And we want to see some good models and a bunch of other stuff. But that's what you would tell him. If I'm going to sign up for this, this is the kind of guy that I'm going to sign up for, somebody that's in a process like this, because that would give me hope. But sorry, it's not going to do it.
And you could get started at the Everyman's Battle Workshop on a whole new life of sexual integrity, which is what he needs. Now, what do you think about all that, Elizabeth?
I think they're all great ideas, and I agree with you 100%.
Okay.
I feel like I've been trying to offer suggestions and some ideas and encouragement, but I agree.
We've never heard of a wife doing that, Elizabeth.
I'm not the one. I know not to do that. I'm not the one that should be doing that.
Yeah.
Well, we are in relationship therapy, but that's going very slowly.
Well, you need, the next time you get in relationship therapy, you ought to just bring up the fact that nothing's being done to repair the lust that led to an affair with somebody close to you. Just say that out loud. Nothing's being done in that area.
And get that chapter of the book and just write down those points and go in there and say, I'd like to see some of this stuff happening.
I gave him a list last week of things that I need him to do, but I've given him that.
Well, What's on the list?
Well, things that the number one was to change his phone number.
That's a good idea to tell a man to do that if you're really sincere. But better idea is to say, would you agree with me that you will never have contact with her again, ever?
Well, I've heard that, but... the trust level.
Can you give us a couple more things on the list? Change the phone number.
I thought it was a good idea to have an accountability partner. I'd like to see him working on himself.
Good.
Which basically sort of summarizes what you've said.
Yeah,
you outlined it more specifically.
Here's the problem that women do. Sometimes, and men, sometimes they'll give the guy a list of behaviors. I want you to, do this for me, or I want you to act this way, or this, that, and the other, which are great, but there's nothing happening in the guy's life that's going to empower him to be able to pull that off. The list that you want, in addition to that, is a process list, like the kind of things I talked about. Those processes are capacity building, and they'll change the person into somebody that can keep that phone number changed, or not just send her the new phone number.
That's
You've got to work on the person change, not just the to-do list.
Okay, let me send you a copy of that wonderful book, Necessary Endings. And, I was just thinking my experience with that counselor was a necessary ending for me. April from Baltimore, Maryland, WRBS.
Or a missed opportunity.
A missed opportunity. Okay, April.
Yes, I'm here. I'm calling because of the call that I heard previously, the lady that's homeless.
Yes.
Her son had put her out.
Yeah.
What I have to say about that, because I can identify nearly, my child didn't put me out, but there was a time in my life that I had to live under the guidance of my child, under mm-hmm. the roof.
And what's your advice to her?
My advice to her is, she was asking if it was a God thing or a devil thing. It is a God thing, because God did not ordain the parents to live under the rule of the child. It's been reversed. And any time something is reversed, God's blessings is not going to flow accordingly. She was made to be the head and not the tail. And when I
hold on a second. She's made to be the head and not the tail.
She's
until the head. Hang on, just hold on a second, okay?
Okay.
It's very important. Okay. Until Galatians 4 says very specifically that children are under the guardians and managers until until a certain date, okay? And at that certain date, there was a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah. Just go to Galatians 4 and read this, where the parenting role of under goes away. And then somebody graduates to adulthood. And what we're talking about here is that he is an adult who apparently is not living up to an adult agreement with his adult mother. And there is a very legal adult responsibility that he has to probably the law if they had a contract of how they're going to share this asset. And so I think when you're talking about adults dealing with adults, it's very important that parents know that they are no longer, quote, the head of some sort of tail, because sometimes that will diminish them stepping up and doing the legal and sometimes and other kinds of hard things where they require adult behavior from their adult children. And it disempowers a lot of times elderly and non-elderly parents from holding adult kids responsible, which is what they need to do oftentimes.
Also, if you move back into your child's home because you need to be taken care of, and you start acting like you're running this place,
that's another problem.
That is going to be a huge problem. All right. Well,
it's a great example of moving out of the authority system once that happens into a system of love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bible says to give a return. So I care about you, and we care about each other, and we don't need a lot of that kind of over-under structure. We just take care of each other.
Right.
And if that's not happening, then you've got to put other things in.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Sabrina from Louisville, Kentucky, WFIA. Hello, Sabrina.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, and I wanted to speak with you guys to get some advice. I'm been married for 27 years. I have 7 children, the youngest being 7 months, and my husband lost his mother and his father within the same year, and in the meanwhile, we separated December 29th of 09 due to a drug addiction to methamphetamine, and I initiated the leaving, which took everything in me to do that. I was 3 months pregnant. He knew I was pregnant. I gave him the hint, you know, there was your clothes, there's a suitcase, didn't you get the hint? And, of course, I thought by doing that it would, you know, have him love us, you know, realize that he loves us, and he didn't want to lose us, but it didn't.
Okay.
I opened the floodgates.
All right, so what's the question for us so we can talk about it at the break?
Where do I go from here? We've been separated for a year and a few months. Mm-hmm. The baby's, you know, 7 months now.
Yeah.
It seems like every time I stand up for myself, I just push him further away, which is not what I want. You know, I want him to get help.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you made a bold move, and he didn't respond to that bold move. So we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll be back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Sabrina here. Husband is involved with one of the most addicting things in our culture today, methamphetamine addiction. And he's not moving her direction.
No, he's with another woman.
He's really not moving your direction.
No, and I mean, he's been around up till the first of the year. He's actually in the month, I say right after Thanksgiving up to Christmas, you know, he would come to the house every day. Just, you know, I was still doing my wife's duties, but, you know, he'd leave. And
yeah,
it just was a big letdown. He went to get help. He lasted 5 days in the rehabilitation center. And then he went back the other way. And
okay, so the question for us would be what?
What do I do at this point? It seems like every time I stand up for myself or put a boundary, I want my marriage to be reconciled, but of course it can't unless he's getting help.
Well, look, and here's the deal. We tell people to do what you did all the time, but there's no formula that guarantees a guy like him is going to respond. And he's responded all right. He's gone the other direction. So
well, yeah. but Steve, I got a question about
okay.
that. If I can, I don't know if she was doing what we tell people to do. And
okay.
You know, with all due respect here, when you were saying that you were having contact with him,
yes,
and he was coming back, when there's been a problem like this and somebody's got to be thrown out and there's a separation, any getting back in the door mm-hmm. should be contingent upon his doing all those yeah. things that I talked about in that list a moment ago. And what happens is the boundaries get squishy, and like you said, he dropped out of rehab after 5 days, but then
yes.
he still can kind of weasel his way in there or whatever.
Good point.
And so it's very, very important that I think you don't know what can happen or what's going to happen until you've gone through a period where there are ironclad boundaries and requirements of if we're going to have contact and if we're going to do this and if we're going to do that, then you've got to be doing the following, and it's got to be verifiable, and that maybe the only place we have contact is in the drug counselor's office where we're working on this process. Otherwise, you have no leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And what an addict is going to do is going to do the path of least resistance and try to gratify themselves without any responsibility. And as long as you kind of keep that door open for that to happen without him working a program, you just don't know what the possibilities are yet.
You know, the part of that...
every time I needed to hear that, definitely, because the boundaries are squishy. Because, you know, I would read the books, and I would try to make our home, like, look better.
What books?
Than what...
Your husband's
like
the one that needs to look
books.
Better, not your home. What, yeah. what books are you talking about?
Like relationship books, you know, on desperate marriages. And
I don't think you need, I don't think you probably need to, unless your home is like, you know, got alligators with a remote on the couch or something. You probably don't have a clean home problem. You got an unclean husband problem. And so you've got to be reading some books that tell you how to deal with addicts.
Sabrina,
yeah.
Here's what's going on is you probably can't do the things we're saying because you've got 7 kids and you're alone and you miss this guy. And so I hear you putting so much energy into what can I do to woo him back. The Bible talks about when you throw a demon out of a house, if you don't mm-hmm. fix it up right, 7 more are going to come back in. You've got a vacuum where a husband is, and so we need you to get healthy and get support and find a great church and a good mentor and woman mentor and counselor, and you need to get all this kind of stuff in your life and in your house and your parenting so all this energy doesn't go into trying to be, you know, the total woman for this guy. And then you can set the boundaries and say, I've got a full life. If you come back, great. You know, there's a time limit here because you're having affairs. But if you choose to come back, here's the requirements. But you won't be able to keep the things we're saying, Sabrina, until you get full and healthy and connected. So we're going to look in your area, find some resources. You hang on, and we'll see who's out there.
Very, very important what John just said.
Squishy boundaries produce squirmy behavior as the person squirms right back in.
And your life becomes squirrely.
Yeah. So good, really good point. I'm glad you brought it up that she hadn't fully completed the task. Yeah. Okay, hold on 1 second, guys. Just, March, what? What?
You get squatters in your home.
Right. That's right. Squatters' rights. All right. Now, Henry, we talked about your book just a little bit, Necessary Endings. What is the biggest thing that keeps people from making the necessary ending that needs to come? Causes them to continue to wish.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to say the biggest thing, but if you had to use one word, I mean, we really got to boil it down to fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's either fear of hurting the person that they have to create an ending with,
yeah,
or it's some sort of a fear that if I create this ending, how will I deal with the loss and the pain or the fear of the unknown? Where do I go from here? Or right. Not having the skills. But God has not called us to a life of fear and timidity. In fact, Hebrews says the one who shrinks back, that God, you know, doesn't take pleasure in our souls when we do that. God's not condemning fear. What he gets on our case about is when we let our fear become bigger than him.
Mm, yeah.
And so it's fine to be afraid, but like John mentioned a moment ago, if you're afraid, take your fear to God's people who can, here's the Bible's word for it, encourage you. Yeah. If you don't have courage, that's fine. You can get encouraged, which means they can give you the courage and they can stand with you.
Yeah. You know what discourages me is when I hear somebody say, well, I went to church 3 Sundays in a row and it just, you know, I just didn't do anything for me. And they don't really understand that church is more than just sitting in a service and hearing somebody teach or hearing some music. It's about getting involved with the people, connection, eyeball to eyeball. And that's what church is really all about. You really have to get involved to understand and experience the real church. Well, as we wrap up this broadcast, I want to be sure that you know Intimacy in Marriage will be July the 24th. And if you've never been on a New Life cruise or trip, we're going to go on the Rhine River this year, September 28th through October the 5th. And I'm telling you, it's going to be a great time. Mylon Kay will be teaching, I'll be teaching, and we'll all be enjoying a deep spiritual experience together. Now, we've had some phone calls where people have made some choices, and everything has changed. And that's why we're here, and we're here because people have supported us. If you've never supported us, well, even if you have, a gift of any amount, I'm going to send you a brand new series, and it's called our Growing Closer to God series. It's a series of videos by myself and Alice, Becky, Chris Williams, and it's Come Near to God. We want you to get closer to God to handle whatever challenge that you have. And we'll send that to you as our way of saying thank you for a gift of any amount. Also, if you join Club New Life at just $30 a month, I'm going to send you a transformation kit that if you don't need it, somebody else, you'll be a hero. It's a Bible, a life recovery Bible, 3 million of those out there. With the workbook alone, it's sold over 500,000 of those workbooks. And then there are 4 other new workbooks to help you go through the Bible grieving or developing sexual integrity, dealing with that weight problem that you've struggled with, or healing from divorce. All of those come, and in addition, there's a journal. The Life Recovery Journal takes you through 4 seasons of recovery. This is a dynamic transformation kit. 7 products we send you. It's like a transformation library, and it's our way of saying thanks for joining Club New Life. Would you join the club? $30 a month. Call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again on Monday for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.